The output that you get from ChatGPT is essentially a guess based on statistical models of language. And that has interesting implications for people who use AI. You're managing probabilities, not rules. And for industries that rely on precision or compliance, that's a profound operational and legal shift that most leaders haven't internalized.
Welcome to Work Matters, where we explore what leaders can do to make work more productive, valuable, meaningful, and impactful. I am your host, Thomas Bertels.
These days, everybody is talking about AI, but how much of that conversation is hype versus reality? In today's episode of the Work Matters podcast, I'm talking with Dave Friedman. Dave is an independent analyst covering AI, and his Substack newsletter, Buy the Rumors, Sell the News, covers the industrial, geopolitical, and economic implications. In our discussion, we explore what is one thing that most people don't understand about AI, why adoption in large companies will be slower than expected, how realistic concerns are that AI agents will do all the work, and in the long run, who will be the winner and who will be a loser in the AI race. I hope you enjoy this conversation. So, Dave, really excited to have you on the show. There's a lot of excitement about AI. You've been writing about it for quite a while, and I love your newsletter, Buy the Rumors, Sell the News. So I appreciate the opportunity to get your perspective on the enterprise context of AI. Maybe just to get us started, what is maybe one thing that most people don't understand about AI?
Excellent question. First, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I think that the biggest misunderstanding is that AI is like traditional software. And when I say AI, let me specify, I'm referring to large language models like ChatGPT, Claude, etc. There are other applications of AI that are not what we call stochastic or probabilistic, but those aren't really what's being debated these days because all the hype is around ChatGPT or Claude. When I say stochastic, it means that the output that you get from ChatGPT is essentially a guess based on statistical models of language. And that has interesting implications for people who use AI. You're managing probabilities, not rules. And for industries that rely on precision or compliance, that's a profound operational and legal shift that most leaders haven't internalized. And what do I mean by that? Because I think that's an important point. Well, organizations are monoliths, right? Every enterprise, every company has certain departments within it that are less precise or more precise. So a marketing department or a customer support department at a tech company can get away with imprecise outputs from large language models. But your payroll department, your tax department, your legal department, your compliance department, procurement, those kind of stochastic processes introduce a lot of risk that I think executives generally are not really ready for, let alone aware of. They just see the AI hype. They conclude it's the hot new thing, and they want to get on board without really understanding how it works.
What are some of the risks that are involved in deploying AIs in the enterprise context?
ChatGPT, it's really kind of a black box. You enter a prompt, you get a response, but you don't really know how that response is generated. And if you're not an expert in whatever you're prompting about, ChatGPT might hallucinate and you might not be aware of it. It's important for people to realize that these are probabilistic tools that can hallucinate if you don't know what you're doing. That's the most obvious one. I think there are also what I would call concentration risks. So your entire operational pipeline might depend on a few model providers or GPU fabs. A geopolitical shock or regulatory shift could crater your operations. Implementing AI to optimize small processes without really understanding where the tail risks are, I think those are sort of the big picture risks that I would identify right away.
There's also, I think, a lot of concern about impact on jobs, especially entry-level roles. But
with respect to entry-level jobs, the concern about job loss is extremely realistic. Think about an entry-level job at a standard corporation. The job is designed to handle predictable grunt work, summarizing, drafting, validating, analyzing data, and that's exactly where AI excels. But the problem is, if corporations rush to gut these roles, you destroy the training ladder for future experts. So companies might save costs now, only to find they've hollowed out their future bench. And that's a very short-sighted way to run an organization. So I would caution any enterprise out there that is looking at AI as an opportunity to reduce payroll, be careful what you wish for. There's some sense among executives that AI will be able to replace vast amounts of their workforce. And while I do think that's true at the margin, I also think that unintended consequences and second order effects are an important consideration to keep in mind when adjusting your payroll.
So those cuts that you're making today might come back to haunt you a year or two down the road.
So let's make it a little more concrete. Say you're Goldman Sachs and you hire a bunch of investment banking analysts right out of college. You put them through a rigorous training program, and over the next several years, the best of them get promoted and they form the brunt of your revenue generating operations. Well, if you decide then, say, 2 years from now, we're no longer going to hire any investment banking analysts because GPT-7 can do all the financial analysis that we need for our deals, well, suddenly you have no way to train these analysts to take over roles as other employees get promoted or leave. Those are the kind of second order and effects that I'm referring to, the unintended consequences of gutting the very people that you train to be promoted when more senior people move on to different companies or themselves are promoted within your company. And that's something that I don't think executives have a real answer for.
Actually, in your blog post today, you made the prediction that the adoption in large companies will be really slow. So we're talking a decade versus months. What's driving that?
There's a pervasive category error that people make with AI. And it's this: they see the speed that AI is improving. Large language models from GPT-3 to GPT-4. GPT-5 is expected to be released sometime this summer. You keep seeing these rapid improvements, and they're fairly significant capability improvements. And people assume then that everything that AI touches will similarly change at a rapid pace. And you got this group of people who I call AI accelerationists, principally in Silicon Valley, who believe that artificial general intelligence will arrive within 5 years, by 2030. And they further extend their argument that since AGI's arrival is imminent, as soon as it arrives, every organization will radically restructure, will become fully autonomous with AI agents doing everything that humans do now. And while that's sort of a compelling science fiction vision, it doesn't really withstand scrutiny. And what do I mean by that? Here's the thing that an enterprise looking at AI needs to think about. They need to think about liability. They need to think about audibility, integration. Big companies live and die by compliance, predictability, legacy systems that are not designed for probabilistic engines. Plus, there's the vendor opacity problem. AI providers, OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, etc., they run black boxes. If I open up ChatGPT and tell it, okay, here's a new employee, figure out the paycheck and the tax withholding for this person, try certifying that under some tax accounting regulation, because you have no way to validate the output. You have no way to explain to an auditor or to a lawyer or to a compliance personnel why the black box gave you the response that it did. So yes, I do think large enterprises will experiment on the edges, but wide-scale adoption inside core processes will crawl until these risks are engineered out and regulators sign off on whatever the solution ends up being. And you could just see from adoption of other technologies, the time frame for example, widespread adoption of enterprise resource planning in large corporations. You know, that lasted from the mid-80s through probably the early 2000s. The commercial internet came online probably in the mid-90s, and companies were still updating their systems from like mainframes and centralized computing in the early 2000s. When electricity first was invented in the late 1800s, I think it took until like the 1920s or the 1930s for it to displace steam engines completely. You know, just looking at the arc of history, every time a new technology comes online, it takes much longer for industry to adopt it than you would expect. Organizations are driven by inertia. Internal politics will often hinder the adoption of new technologies because middle managers feel threatened. You know, if you're the CFO of a large industrial company, for example, and you call in your vice president of production and say, we're going to fire 75% of your direct reports and replace them with AI agents, suddenly you're told 75% of your internal empire is disappearing. You're not going to like that. You're going to do everything in your power to stop it or slow it down. And repeat that across thousands of different organizations. You know, people respond to incentives, and the problem that AI accelerationists keep running into is they've got this very abstract, highly idealized conception of how organizations actually adopt technology. Yeah, I expect large companies to adopted much more slowly than is commonly expected.
When you and I spoke before, you also mentioned that there's, I think, another factor that weighs in, that I think a lot of executives make really bad assumptions about the level of AI literacy.
Let's pick a company, say Pepsi or Coca-Cola, any one of either of those companies. The senior executives at those companies, I'm sure they've talked to the McKinsey consultants, they talked to their lawyers. Some of them probably even talk to venture capitalists and startup CEOs, and they are aware of AI as a thing. But the frontline employees, sure, maybe they've heard of ChatGPT because their kid was talking about it at the soccer game last weekend, or you know, their sister was like, look at my phone, I have this amazing AI app. But that doesn't really translate into AI literacy. You get the black box problem that I was talking about before. If you're an executive at Coca-Cola and your CMO comes to you and says, everyone's going to start using ChatGPT now, and you pass the order down the line, you know, you send out an email, you guys are all getting ChatGPT accounts, we need to see you use it. Well, you know, what is measured is managed. So you start managing according to how much people are using the tool, but you don't actually have any insight into whether they're using it effectively. And I think that is going to cause a lot of friction, because the learning curve for these tools, it's manageable, but it's somewhat steep. You know, you sit in front of the ChatGPT interface and you've got a blank box. What do you do with that? For some people, they take to it like a fish takes to water, certainly happening with me when I first started using it. But to be very straightforward, most people are not like me. They're going to look at it. They're going to be confused. They're not going to know how to use it. And it'll be just another corporate initiative that kind of dies on the vine. You know, I think that the most successful implementations of AI in the enterprise are going to look very different from what most people expect. My mental model for enterprise adoption of AI is that successful adoption is going to look very similar to Palantir's model for implementing its software in the organizations that use it. And what does Palantir do? They have these very complex processes to basically drop in engineers at client sites. They call them forward deployed engineers. And those engineers sit with reporting lines at a client company for months on end and just iterate a fast loop, you know, integrating Palantir's software on a bespoke basis with their client and architect new workflows. I think that's what's going to have to happen with AI. If you really want to integrate AI deeply into an enterprise workflow, you're really going to have a set of consulting engineers, whether it's from OpenAI, possibly Deloitte or one of those consultancies, who basically sits between the large language model and the client and figures out, okay, how do we reconcile the client's workflow with how the technology actually works? That's a difficult problem because most organizations are not set up for that kind of exploratory analysis. They just want to be able to buy a piece of software and have their employees start to use it. But AI is not like SaaS. And I think that the enterprise thinks that AI is like Salesforce or Slack or even Microsoft Office. They're going to be sorely disappointed.
I think that's interesting because I guess that also like a little bit destroys his dream of getting rid of all these pesky humanoids that complain because in order to get to that point, I need to hire an army of folks from OpenAI or Anthropic.
Right.
And I guess given the way the technology progresses, that's probably going to be a semi-permanent thing, right? Because it's not like you do this for 3 months and you're done.
I think so. And the alternative would be the enterprise itself builds the capability internally. And if it's a large enough company, I could see like Walmart, for example, building their capability internally. But other companies, I don't know, like a grocery chain, they probably don't have the capital or expertise to develop the capability internally and will rely on external consultants. Those companies that are able to develop AI tuning capabilities internally will fare much better because when you don't have to rely on an external vendor, you can ensure that the operation is much more tightly integrated into your daily operations. But it'll be interesting. I expect over the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see a lot of what I will call sort of AI adoption theatrics, where a pilot program is announced. You know, there's a press release and the CEO can talk about it on the quarterly earnings and the board can check a box and say, we're doing AI. And it won't be especially effective. It'll be quietly shelved after a few years. You're going to see a lot of startups that are pitching AI for the enterprise to close down. You're going to see a lot of venture capital money incinerated. But I do expect some Palantir-style company out there will kind of crack this and really develop a robust methodology for implementing AI in the enterprise. You know, it may very well be Palantir. It may be a company like SAP or Oracle or OpenAI. I believe that OpenAI is trying to set up some sort of a consultancy service for integrating ChatGPT into the enterprise. I don't know if that has had any success, but you know, it's going to be a slog getting enterprise to become AI native.
AI, the different flavors. And I guess
sure.
we're all mesmerized with Claude and ChatGPT, and that's right, what consumers can access. You can go in there and say, plan me a trip to, I don't know, Copenhagen. But I guess in the enterprise context, using ChatGPT circuits, giving a tool to workers to summarize meeting notes, create presentations, and so forth. So it's really a tool for the individual to do whatever they need to do. But I think what we're talking about with these enterprise deployments are really pharma companies looking at drug discovery. So I'm wondering, in that context, like for those applications, I guess there are two ways to go. One is to say, let's make the existing work more efficient. Let's get rid of people. Let's automate. The other one is to say, wow, this could allow us to do so much more or different than what we can do. Where do you see the energy go?
That's an interesting question. And I would say that the answer to it is really going to depend crucially on the industry in question, and maybe even the company within the industry. I think industries that tend to have larger profit margins will be less excited at the prospect of getting rid of lots of people, just simply because they can finance the payroll more easily. Take an industry like grocery retail, the profit margins are terrible, like 1 or 2% at most. And if AI can reduce demand for labor, maybe in like the warehouse, I would expect grocery stores to rapidly adopt that. Grocery stores have already adopted self-checkout to get rid of some labor costs. So that's one industry where I think the profit motive is there to make rapid adoption of AI to make operations more efficient. But pharma, for example, which you also mentioned, is completely different because, so there actually is an AI company, I think they're based in Washington, called John Snow Labs. They're not very well known, but they basically only deal with pharma clients, and they have built AI tools for pharma research for many years, predating the release of ChatGPT. And I think pharma companies look at it as a tool to enhance the productivity of their workers. And there are probably some regulatory aspects there as well. Pharma is heavily regulated. Now, I'm not an expert in pharmaceutical research, so you may have a listener challenge me on this point, but I'm fairly confident that you can't bring a drug to market without a lot of human intervention. Even if you can automate this discovery of molecules, there still needs to be a lot of people involved in the various sequential steps between researching the molecule, taking it through drug trials, getting approvals to market it and release it to the public. All of those steps require a lot of people, irrespective of whatever technology you use. And so, you know, that kind of exercise is going to apply to every industry. Certain industries will be able to tolerate more employees, even with AI, and other industries are going to be jumping at the chance to eliminate vast numbers of people simply because their profit margins aren't great to begin with. And if they can reduce payroll expense by adopting technology, they're going to pursue it. So I guess the short answer to your question is it's going to vary significantly by industry.
Let's say I'm the head of marketing for like a consumer goods company, right? And I look at LinkedIn, I see all these people that say all these wonderful things that it does. What questions should I ask myself? I probably have to do something, but how do I figure out what's the right thing to do? What questions should I ask? How do I figure out where AI can help?
If you're a consumer products good company, I think that, you know, there's some interesting angles here. You could use AI to generate marketing campaigns at scale, come up with, you know, lots of different ideas for marketing campaigns. There are opportunities to make customer service more efficient with AI agents. There are opportunities to develop creative ad campaigns with new video generation software. You know, I think the sky's the limit as long as you understand the, you know, again, as long as you understand the risks. You know, I said earlier in this conversation that within a company, different departments are going to have a greater or lesser tolerance to use AI. And in the context of consumer packaged goods, marketing campaigns would be one of the sort of what I would call a high tolerance for AI. What's the consequence of a marketing team creating a bad marketing campaign from AI? Well, a human catches it before it's released and there's no issue. So that's a fairly low cost, low risk opportunity. But again, what's a higher risk opportunity even in consumer packaged goods? You just hired a new employee and you feed his personnel information into an AI bot and it spits out his paycheck and there's some error with the paycheck and you're like, well, sorry, the black box created the output. That's not gonna fly. Payroll is one of those things that you have to get right under threat of significant criminal penalties to both executives and the organization as a whole. And enterprises, if they're smart, are not going to expose themselves to those risks. So again, this is going to vary within a company by department. There's some opportunity with marketing. There's opportunity with sales and customer support. But again, there are those high risk areas where you don't want AI involved, at least until the technology evolves to the point where you can account for any variances where it's no longer a black box.
People talk about that they just feed all their emails into ChatGPT to drive performance reviews. You also see companies that are touting solutions that say we can sort of proactively identify who's likely to jump ship or who's disengaged. I guess that's like medium risk, right? That's probably more, you don't end up in jail.
I've seen startups that are trying to sell that capability and I understand it. Like I understand from the perspective of the startup that is trying to sell the capability and from the perspective of the company that wants to buy the capability, I understand why they want to do it. But to my way of thinking, it's sort of ignoring unintended consequences because if I'm an employee in a company, and I know that my company is ingesting my daily activities into an AI engine to try to infer whether I'm happy at my job or planning to leave, that makes me not really trust my employer much and makes me more inclined to find alternative opportunities. You could be cynical and say it's a cost-effective way for a company to reduce its payroll, but I tend to think that when companies pursue those kinds of passive aggressive employee reduction policies, it tends to bite them down the road. That's the kind of danger with AI. It's this incredibly powerful technology, and in that way, it's fairly seductive to executives who want to assert control over their workforce. It goes both ways. If you gut your workforce, what do you have? You don't really have a company anymore.
I guess the technology is seductive in a sense that AI doesn't talk back. AI doesn't ask for a break, a raise, a promotion. Right? It just churns out stuff really fast too.
Right.
But I guess in the long run, it obviously has consequences down the road. Do you erode your talent base? Or even do you lock yourself into like a dependency? Since you have such a broad view of the industry, I'd like to get your perspective on who's going to like win and lose 5 years from now. How are people going to fare with this? Are they going to be dependent on OpenAI as like the new Google? How is this going to play out?
It's an excellent question. I have a fairly contrarian and non-consensus view of winners and losers in the AI ecosystem. I think the winners will be the companies that control the foundational layers, the models. So that would be companies like OpenAI, Google, Anthropic. But as well, the companies that control GPUs, the chips that are used to generate AI output and train AI models, companies that control power, companies that control data centers, companies that own unique data that they can use to fine-tune these models. So if you build on top of a foundational model, If you build a tool for, I don't know, say the oil and gas industry, because you have access to decades of oil drilling data that OpenAI never got access to, you can fine-tune ChatGPT and create a proprietary data moat. Those are the types of companies that I expect to be winners in the AI ecosystem. The losers, all the startups that the venture capitalists are funding that are basically just what I call GPT wrappers, the models themselves tend to absorb capabilities as popular capabilities are built on top of them. OpenAI and Anthropic have essentially outsourced R&D to startups and the venture capitalists that invest in them. So yeah, I think the losers are going to be a lot of the startups that build on top of the foundational models, the venture capitalists who invest in those startups, and the limited partners who invest in the venture capital funds.
What about the companies that use these tools? Large enterprises, and if you implemented ERP, you're kind of stuck with SAP, I would say, Oracle, right? Maybe there's one or two others, but it's really finite. Do you see like a similar dependency in this space?
I think it's sort of inevitable that you will see a similar dependency, because let's look at an ERP system like SAP. SAP over decades has developed a specialty in designing and building these ERP systems. If you're a company that uses SAP and you decide that you don't like SAP anymore, you're kind of stuck because you can't rip SAP out and build it internally. There's not an alternative provider that can easily slot into SAP's position. And I think it's going to be the same with AI. You are going to deeply integrate AI into your operations. That implies that switching costs are significant and that these are sticky enterprise contracts. It's not like enterprise SaaS. I think a lot of Silicon Valley types assume that something like Salesforce or Slack or Notion or Dropbox or any of these SaaS companies that have popped up over the past 15 years are sticky. But I don't think they're really sticky in a way that something like SAP or Oracle or Microsoft or presumably AI is. These are sort of pieces of software that are existentially important to the operation of a large organization. Whereas, you know, at heart, something like Salesforce, it's just a list of sales contacts. Yes, it's a little more complicated than that, but, you know, if your list of sales contacts disappeared tomorrow, you're going to be in a, have a rough time for a couple of quarters. But, you know, is that existential? Not in the way that ripping out, say, SAP or other deeply embedded software would be.
Amazon has this term, one-way door, two-way doors. Right? And I guess they encourage people to take these two-way doors because you can go back and forth, you can experiment, you can fail, nothing breaks. And I guess what people see right now with AI are these two-way doors, because it's, I can go to ChatGPT and upload this document, or I can go to Claude.
That's certainly true at the individual and consumer level. The switching costs for ChatGPT or Claude are minimal. Don't really see that being the case when enterprises adopt them, because I think you're going to end up having situations where ChatGPT or Claude or whatever model the enterprise chooses will be tightly integrated with the enterprise's data and workflows. And, you know, it's the type of integration that gets tighter over time, because as you feed more corporate data into your hosted large language model, it becomes more powerful over time and more deeply integrated into your corporate systems. So I think, you know, once that happens, it's going to be very hard to dislodge. If you're using a fine-tuned version of ChatGPT and Anthropic comes knocking or Google comes knocking, it's going to be very hard to dislodge OpenAI from that enterprise.
So that also makes it important that people might make very careful decisions as they go through these one-way doors. Very insightful. I learned so much from your newsletter and again, in this conversation. So for our listeners, Dave, if they want to right? Know more about what you do, your work, read what you're writing about. Where should they go?
I would say check out my Substack, davefriedman.substack.com, otherwise known as Buy the Rumor, Sell the News. That's the best way to read my writing, and my contact information is at the bottom of every post. I encourage all my readers to reach out and connect with me. I think that's how you and I connected. I'm happy to speak with people about AI. As I mentioned, I tend to have a somewhat contrarian and non-consensus view on AI. If that's not your thing, I guess I'm not the person for you, but I tend to think that it offers insight that you can't easily get elsewhere.
I found it really like a breath of fresh air, because there's all this hype and it makes everybody feel like, gee, if I'm not doing 50 things with AI, I'm probably falling behind. And your newsletter, I think, offers some confirmation that maybe it is okay to be a fast follower.
The reality is AI is moving very rapidly. The capabilities are improving significantly. There are thousands of startups that are building products on top of these models. There are fascinating things happening at the infrastructure level with, you know, power generation and building out data centers. There are all these interesting geopolitical machinations going on in Washington, D.C. and Riyadh and Dubai and so on. So it's this sort of endlessly fascinating ecosystem, and you can get lost in it very easily. But, you know, my message to anyone who has just a casual interest in AI is twofold. One, the world is not going to change tomorrow. The change that is happening will unfold over decades, and most of it will look fairly gradual to you. And secondly, and probably more importantly, all the people who are promising radical change are based basically in Silicon Valley and have an incentive to drive that narrative. They're storytellers. Look at them as a kind of entertainment. They're certainly very smart people. I do think that they see a future that most people don't see. I suspect that their vision of the future is directionally correct, but I disagree profoundly with their timelines.
Listen, I tremendously enjoy your newsletter. We're going to put the link into the show notes so it's easy for people to get to. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time, let's make work matter.